Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go, Sunday, July 8th, 2018. I am your host, PW Torch columnist Greg Parks, and this is Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com. A lot to talk about this week as far as the big events in pro wrestling, as we always try to talk about here on Wrestling Night in America. That includes last night's New Japan G1 special coming to you live on Access TV from San Francisco. It includes next week's WWE Extreme Rules pay-per-view, and coming at you 2 weeks from tonight is Impact Wrestling Slammiversary. Now, before I bring on our guest, I just want to let you in on our schedule for the next few weeks. We are here live 8 p.m. Eastern, as we are most weeks, here on PWTorchLivecast.com. However, next week, because there's an Extreme Rules WWE pay-per-view, I'll be going on the air live right after that pay-per-view closes on the WWE Network. We'll be taking your calls and tweets, etc., on Extreme Rules. Now, the week after that, Sunday, July 22nd, it'll be another Impact Wrestling takeover of Wrestling Night in America. Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek will be taking the reins of this show after Slammiversary, taking your phone calls and emails and tweets on Impact Wrestling's latest pay-per-view offering. And then I'll be back the next week, the 29th, with a regularly scheduled 8 p.m. Eastern showing of Wrestling Night in America. So that's where things stand for the next few weeks. But I'm very excited right now to welcome aboard the originator of Wrestling Night in America, the former host of this show, former PW Torch columnist Pat McNeil joins us. Pat, thanks for taking the time out and joining us for a little bit of a Wrestling Night in America reunion tonight.
Hello, you people. Hello, Greg. It's great to be back here. It's just, you know, you picked an interesting Sunday to invite me, because it's not like there's anything going on in the business this weekend.
No, of course not. I figured I'd have you on the show just to fill time and, you know, stand-up work and everything like that.
Yeah, just some wacky bits. Yeah, that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, exactly. Now, it's good to have you. Hope everything's going well. I know you've got the new baby McNeil, and I hope everything's going well and fatherhood's treating you well.
Yes, it is. It's a great thing. Mary's 6 months old, and she's hopefully going to go to sleep now, so we can enjoy the next 90 minutes in peace and quiet. But things are going very well on that front, Greg. It's just
excellent.
It does sort of cut into the time you would normally that I would normally spend watching, you know, 4.5 hour New Japan specials, that sort of thing.
Understandable. I also want to take the time to mention that while you are doing all these other things like rearing a child, you are still doing Way Back Playback with Jim Valley, which is a very popular audio show. So for those of our listeners who have maybe not sampled that, give the fans a little bit of a taste of what that's about and where they can find you guys.
Okay, Way Back Playback is it's a watch along show. It's one of those things that Jim Valley and I started it 4 years ago for PW Torch VIP members, where we take a show off the WWE Network and we all hit play at the same time and we watch along, and Jim and I do commentary and go over you know everything that was going on at that point in professional wrestling and tell lots of bad jokes. Now the first 189 episodes of it are available exclusively for PW Torch VIP members. You can subscribe and get all those. At the moment, the next 11 can be found in iTunes, including episode 200, which went up today, which was for the first time ever, we're doing a show exclusively off of YouTube, where Jim and I are watching and reviewing the pilot episode of Tag Team, a show that aired in January of 1991, where Roddy Piper and Jesse Ventura play wrestlers turned cops. I am not making this up, in Los Angeles. And it was every bit as amazing as you could possibly imagine. And definitely, if you've not seen the show, this would probably be a good episode to start with. So you want to check that out. It's over on, just go to iTunes, type in Wayback Playback with Pat, or even Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, and that's the best way to do it. And we're looking forward to putting on another, 200 or 300 episodes, and we really enjoy doing it, and we definitely want to thank KenandTech.com. Ken is a PW Torch VIP member who also his business is sponsoring the Wayback Playback, so big shout out for him. But yeah, if you go to Real Pat McNeil, which is my Twitter account right now, you can what's my Twitter account all the time. You can vote on next week's episode. We have you can choose from either a WWF, WCW, original ECW, or Herb Abrams UWF show. So vote often. Vote early.
Fantastic. Definitely, if you have not checked that out, check that out. Really good work done by Pat and Jim with those shows. While you guys focus your attention on the past, we're going to talk a little more about the present here right now on Wrestling Night in America, specifically last night.
Greg, you say that, and yet I know for a fact, having watched the end of that show, that the top heel in New Japan Wrestling right now is Haku, and I promise you, we've covered a lot of Haku matches on Wayback Playback.
So maybe you can be an expert here and tell the fans who have not had the joy of watching Haku in his prime what we can expect. Because, yeah, that was a wild ending to New Japan's G1 special from the Cow Palace last night, where it seemed that for the briefest of moments, the Bullet Club truly was fine and everything was copacetic in Bullet Club land, only for the Tongan representatives to have an issue with that. Tama Tonga, Tongaloa, and Haku on the attack, basically laying out the bulk of the Bullet Club at the very end of that show and doing a very extended beatdown. If you had told me that the show would end with Tongaloa, Haku, and Tama Tonga standing tall, I would not have bet money on that, Pat. What do you see as the direction heading into the G1 this summer?
I guess the direction is I guess eventually we're going to get the Bullet Club against the Firing Squad or whatever. Yeah, I guess they're being called the Firing Squad now. It's Haku and his two sons, the Gorillas of Destiny, Tama Tonga and Tongaloa. And I'm sort of two minds on that beatdown, Greg, because on the one hand, I remember the 90s when the NWO, Hogan, Hall, and Nash were running roughshod over WCW, and I'm like, this is ridiculous. There's three guys beating there's a company with 100 guys, and there's three guys just, dominating, and WCW can't get their act together. On the other hand, I watched last night, and I had no problem believing that Haku and his sons could wipe out the entire, could wipe out half the New Japan roster. None whatsoever.
Yeah. It's a little different than Horace Hogan and Vincent being a part of the group and dominating and laying out the WWE roster, isn't it?
Yeah, but again, this is a similar problem to what WWE has. They're doing a 4.5-hour special on Access TV, and by the end of it, Jim Ross is dragging like any normal person who's doing 4.5 hours of play-by-play would be. It's not like it's not like New Japan splitting up the commentary like WWE does for these epic 5-hour bombs that they're putting on. So Ross is exhausted and Barnett's kind of exhausted and they're getting sort of goofy and Barnett's going, "Yeah, when's Barbarian coming out here?" And Jim Ross is like, "Oh, by God, boy, government mule." And that makes it difficult. I appreciate that they want to do a major storyline at the end of the show, to sort of wrap things up in a bow. I get that, and I thought it was sort of effective, but and Cody is back with the Bullet Club, and the Bullet Club is fine except for them getting the crap kicked out of them. But it just felt like the show was too long, which is hard to believe because you had those three fantastic matches one after the other to wrap it up. And
you mentioned JR and Josh Barnett getting involved in the Juice Robinson Jay White match. I wanted to ask you specifically about their commentary for these shows, because there's a lot of debate on Twitter about the effectiveness of the Jim Ross, Josh Barnett team, especially live, versus Kevin Kelly and Don Callis, who do the New Japan World English commentary for the events held in Japan. And Pat, I just kind of want to get your personal preference, JR and Barnett or Kevin Kelly and Don Callis?
There's no question that Kevin Kelly and Don Callis are better at this. I mean, this is their job. They're not, you know, they're not passing through. I like Josh Barnett. I know that he's a big wrestling fan, but this is not their product. And I mean, Jim Ross called half hour matches. I mean, what, once a month? You know, I mean, you're getting these long matches after long matches after long matches. It's just not. And I mean, there's no question that, you know, if it was Steve Austin and The Rock getting beaten down by the firing squad, you know, JR would have been all about it. But, you know, okay, well, it's Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. You know, he's not feeling it. I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah.
And with
Josh Barnett, I'm kind of surprised, because I expected him to bring a lot more, I guess, discussion of wrestling technique and what they were doing in the ring. And, you know, it was more of the kind of cutesy one-liners he'd come up with on this show. And I don't know if he'd be better with someone who was more energized in the play-by-play role, because JR is just kind of, whether or not it's his intention, and I'm sure it's not, he's a professional, it does kind of feel like at times he's going through the motions. And I wonder if Barnett had a more enthusiastic and more someone who is more invested in the product as a play-by-play man, whether that would bring more of the analyst out in him.
Probably would. I mean, I'm not saying that they're bad, but it definitely felt like, you know, it definitely felt like that end of the show needed vintage JR getting in here and getting all worked up over the fact that these evil Tongan bastards are beating down poor Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. But, you know, even then you would have had Josh Barnett undercutting him by pointing out, hey, these are the Bullet Club. These guys have been the top heels for a year. They've beaten the crap out of everybody else. Nobody's coming to their defense. You know, just desserts, which is certainly a viable way of looking at it.
The other thing, the big overview that we can take from this event before we go to our first break here, is the news that apparently Hiromu Takahashi ended last night with a broken neck, as reported by the Wrestling Observer, for the bump off of the Phoenix suplex he took, where he not only landed on his neck, but like slid across the ring on his neck after taking the bump. And it just kind of give you the willies to watch it. You knew right then and there that was not a safe bump or a proper bump to take. Now there's this whole debate about, you know, this comes on the heels of Hanma, who was seriously injured from a bump he took, although that was more fluke than anything else. You've got Shibata, who cracked his skull and, you know, has just recently returned, albeit in very limited action. And now Takahashi with the broken neck here. So I guess my question is this something New Japan needs to look at? I know that there is a different mentality in Japan with wrestling. WWE has taken strides to eliminate a lot of bumps on the neck and things like that. You'll still get the wear and tear injuries. I mean, it was just tweeted today, Fandango is going to be out 6 months with a torn labrum in his shoulder. So they're not immune to injuries, but the serious injuries that we're seeing out of New Japan, is there anything that can be done to curb this? Should there be something done, or is this just the price you pay for being a professional wrestler?
I mean, part of it is I don't know exactly how that was supposed to end up. I'm guessing either Takahashi didn't get up far enough, or Dragon Lee didn't launch him far enough, because I'm pretty sure that's not how he was supposed to land. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt there. But you watch this, and then, you know, everybody, and then I've seen the video posted from the week before that, where Naito, by all accounts, you know, from looking at that, I'm amazed he didn't get his neck broken off of something that with a similar landing. And I think you got to start asking yourself, maybe this is too much, because I remember back in 2001, and it's described in the back issues of the Torch, if you want to read it. After King of the Ring, you know, the locker room looked like a trauma center because of all the, you know, because they're using, you know, they're throwing each other through broken glass, and guys have neck injuries and back injuries and all that sort of thing. And the decision was made, hey, let's maybe tone this down a little bit here. Wrestling's war's over. We don't need to keep, we don't need to keep having guys break themselves every week for this. And I think that's something New Japan's going to have to look at, because they've got these top stars, and they're very athletic, but they want to keep them around. We had Misawa die basically from, you know, after all those, you know, taking a lot of neck bumps and a lot of suplexes. And even if somebody doesn't get injured off of a big move like what happened to Naito, you know, you run the risk. I mean, it adds to the bump card. You run the risk of, you know, just an innocuous bump, and bang, you know, you've torn your shoulder, you've broken your collarbone, that sort of thing.
We're going to be back with more discussion of the New Japan G1 special in San Francisco, as well as your calls. 515-605-9345 is the number. Stay tuned. More Wrestling Night in America after this.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Wrestling Night in America returns here for Sunday, July 8th, 2018. Greg Parks, Pat McNeil here with you discussing New Japan's G1 special that took place last night. Pat, just over 6,000 was the attendance at the Cow Palace. I thought they were a loud crowd. They came across well on TV, but it was evident when JR and Josh Barnett did on cameras, and you could see behind them, there were quite a few empty seats. This number of attendance, 6,000 at the Cow Palace, is that, how do you read that as far as New Japan's momentum in the United States and trying to make a foothold here in North America? Is that a decent number for coming over, or, you know, is that somewhat of a disappointment, do you think?
I think that puts them at a pretty strong number two right now, either them or Ring of Honor. And Ring of Honor has only had one show that drew that amount. So, I mean, this is, you know, this, they're not selling out 18,000 seat arenas, but WWE isn't doing that most nights either. So, I mean, this is, you know, it's a big enough crowd and a hot crowd. And, you know, I mean, you got to remember, I mean, a decade ago, Ring of Honor did a show at the Cow Palace, and I think they drew 200. That was more due to local promotion than anything else. But, it's a strong showing. And maybe they'll get another strong. And I think they've had good showings the other times that they've done shows in North America. So they're not at the WWE level, but that's something that will come with more time and with more familiarity.
The show, as it happened last night, started off with Romero, Sho, Yo, Ghetto, and Yoshihashi over Owens, Yujiro Takahashi, Tongaloa, Tamatanga, and Haku in the opener. Of course, who would think at that point that three on the losing team would play such a big role by the end of the show. Match number two was Ishii and Yano over Suzuki and Sabre Jr. Match number three was Kushida and Tanahashi over Adam Page and Marty Scurll. I was a little down, Pat, on the use of some of the bigger names here, Tanahashi in a tag match, and the same with later on Okada and Naito and guys like that. But yeah. I really liked one of my favorite matches on the night, actually, was Ishii and Yano over Suzuki and Sabre. I thought that was a really fun match, appropriate for that point on the show. When you look at these first three matches on the undercard, you know, this is a pretty good offering, even though some of the bigger names were used in tag matches.
Yeah, I think if that Kushida and Tanahashi and against Paige and Skrull match had happened in Ring of Honor, they'd be going nuts over it, and it'd be one of the featured matches on the show. Plus, I think what you got there was a variety of styles in the first three matches, which you need that mix. It's not New Japan's not all it's not all stiffness. It's not all high flying guys. You need sort of that. If you're going to be a major promotion, you need to be able to change gears.
The middle of the card saw Goto over Jeff Cobb. The Young Bucks defeated Evil and Sonata, and Ospreay and Okada over Naito and Bushi. Jeff Cobb's use here in New Japan, he seems to fit the mold of what New Japan looks for in some of their North American transports. He's been compared to Michael Elgin in size and shape a little bit. What do you think it was Jeff Cobb's potential if New Japan chooses to use him more?
Oh, I think that you'll see more matches like this, and when Cobb is trusted more, when he's got a few more matches under his belt, I think I can make good use of him. I mean, I think you look at him and you look where C.J. Parker, Juice Robinson was a few years ago, in terms of potential, I mean, Cobb's got a lot more potential. But it depends on a lot of different factors, as you know.
Sure. And finally, the final three matches on the show, Takahashi over Dragon Lee to retain the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship, although now that certainly is up in the air with the injury to Takahashi. Juice Robinson over Jay White to win the United States title, and Omega over Cody in the main event, which I don't think – really surprised anyone. I want to talk about Robinson versus Jay White because I think that was the surprise of the night. It was a match that the crowd was into just as much as I think any other match on the card. The near fall where Juice hit Pulp Friction at near the very end and then White kicked out, and you could almost hear the air go out of the building. And I thought Juice was going to win this match up until that point. When White kicked out of that, I thought, well, Juice isn't going to win this now. And then he wins with this roll-up. Do you think it was necessary with so many titles on the line to have one change hands on this show to maybe make the fans feel like they saw something big?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's what they were going for. I think that's part of the point of having the U.S. title in the first place, to have, to have something where it can change hands on an American show and it's a big deal.
Yeah. Was that your surprise of the night? Did you think that match?
Mine, but I think it was more Sean Radican's surprise of the night based on what he was tweeting. So, that was fantastic. I mean, it's been really interesting over the past couple of years watching Juice Robinson evolve, for want of a better term, in New Japan and become this guy that people are buying it, that he's at the point where people are buying into him as one of the best wrestlers in the world because he's wrestling like one of the best wrestlers in the world.
And Sean Radican and Wade Keller both have their G1 special reports up on PWTorch.com. And Sean also has audio. I don't know if it's up right now. I don't see it on the front page, but I know he tweeted about it. Close to 2 hours of audio reviewing that event last night with Bruce Mitchell and others. So be on the lookout for that if you're a VIP member of PWTorch.com. And if not, PWTorch.com/GoVIP is the place to go VIP. Let's go to the phones with our first caller of the evening. It is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, what are your questions for us tonight?
And my first match for you is on the death match I went to last night. I noticed a lot of the fans, even like in the very top of the rows, were wearing like those masks that you see like sick people wear, because they broke about 400 of those light tubes, and some of them were like about 9 to 10 feet tall. So is that pretty common for fans to be wearing those masks, and is it really dangerous to go to those events as a spectator to inhale that stuff?
In San Francisco?
This was in West Virginia.
Oh, what show were you at last night? Smarten us up here.
It was the Vicious Outcast Wrestling Show. in Shinston, West Virginia, at a local Fox's Pizza Den. But I guess the Fox's Pizza Den has like a gymnasium, because that's where the event was, but it's connected to the Fox's building.
Okay, well, listen, asbestos is perfectly safe. Donald Trump and Scott Pruitt say so, so don't worry about it. What was the main event there, Brian?
Well, actually, I didn't even make it to the main event because one of the matches, they did a superplex off the top of the bleachers, and I was trying to get out of the way, but I couldn't, and I ended up with bloody khaki shorts, so I had to leave early to clean up because, you know, I had one bathroom and a little boy sort of being possessive of the bathroom for me to clean up in.
Okay. Greg, you know, it's times like these where I really, really miss the sound effects. I just want to point that out.
I'm assuming you definitely do. West Virginia, that's coal mining territory. I don't know. Maybe the air is coal air is – come on. I don't know. That's new to me, Ryan.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you had a great time, Ryan.
Yeah, I did miss the Canadian destroyer off the top of the bleachers through a, I guess it was like a trampoline of barbed wire that had those fluorescent.
Wow, I mean that's just so commonplace these days. You can go to any show and see that.
So Ryan, do you know when the replay of the show is airing on Fight TV?
I think it's going to be available on DVD because I think they usually put these out on DVD. But I think they had to disband their streaming service because it wasn't working in West Virginia or that part of the United States.
Okay.
All right, Ryan, what's your second question for us tonight?
My second question for you is I'm going to get to a show next weekend where Bruce Pritchard is going to be the general manager of the show. So is there any shows that you've gone to that they've had a very unique general manager to run the show?
I know that Eric Bischoff has done shows where he's done like guest general manager. And I think it's just, it seems like that if they have a big name from the past who wasn't a wrestler, it's just a way to use them and to try to draw fans. And that's kind of my take on it, Pat.
Yeah. That's where you put the guys who, you know, are not going to bump. That's just a safe way to do it. Let's see. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, Pro Wrestling Syndicate back several years ago would do the guest GM gimmick, and they did that a lot. I know who the worst general manager of a indie wrestling show was, and that would be me. So,
oh, Pat, I think you're probably being a little hard on yourself.
That's true. You're right, Greg. That was fantastic. Okay, what else can we do for you, Ryan?
Yeah, my final question for you. It's for Pat. If you were to do one match in CPW, who would it be against?
Let's see. That's it. Jeez. That's a good question. I try to keep track of who's still wrestling up there. I would probably do it with against Bill Bain, who I think is the champion up there right now. So, hi Bill, if you're listening.
Ryan, thanks for the phone call. Look forward to hearing from you again.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm even allowed to go to these shows anymore, but maybe Pat can make it to one of those.
It's a long trip for me now. Yeah.
Tell him you know Pat. You'll be able to get in easy.
That's true.
I don't know. Shane Shadow doesn't seem too...
Well, okay. Thank you, Ryan.
All right.
It's good to be back home. Yes.
It is, isn't it? Look at what you missed. Oh, so much fun. We're going to take another break and be back with some previewing of WWE Extreme Rules, which takes place next Sunday, and more of your phone calls here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants." And he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. See, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
Sala Monster sounds off.
Since 2007, the Sala Monster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Back here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com, Greg Parks and Pat McNeil with you for old time's sake, and we're going to preview Extreme Rules, which takes place next Sunday, July 15th, 2018. Before we get to that, there was some major news last night, courtesy of UFC, where Brock Lesnar showed up and now is expected to fight Daniel Cormier at some point in the near future in UFC. Jeremy Botter reporting that the match will take place in November, which means that Lesnar will have had to put his name in to be retested via the USADA a couple months ago. His name has not been released as being tested, though, so that certainly is up in the air about when that fight is going to take place. Pat, cut through all this for us. What does this mean for Brock Lesnar in WWE?
I think I just pushed the wrong button. Okay. I think that they're going to tease that, which they have been already, that Brock Lesnar is going to leave with the Universal title and take it to UFC, where he will unify it with the UFC heavyweight title, which actually sounds like a better storyline than what they're going to do. So it's obvious that this is where they're heading. They've wanted to make Brock Lesnar a heel for months, and they've gotten people to not care about Brock Lesnar, which we saw how well that worked out during WrestleMania. It didn't work out very well at all. But I think this definitely lends to the theory that we are going to see Lesnar versus Reigns 3 coming up at SummerSlam. And I think that's a terrible idea to put that out there in front of the fans in Brooklyn.
Yeah, it's one of those matches that I don't know how WWE can't see the reaction that's going to be coming if that indeed does take place. If, you know, the other thing is Lesnar going to even be at SummerSlam? Because there's some question about that now. And if he is fighting in November, he'll be full on into, a training camp. Is he going to want to take the time out to drop the title, even if it's a quick 1 minute match before his UFC fight? Is there any possibility that WWE keeps the title on Lesnar through his UFC fight, so he's actually fighting in UFC as WWE Universal Champion?
Given how they've treated the Universal title the past 6 months, I'm almost thinking that would be a better option, because it's now looking even more so than it did before like they should have switched the title in Saudi Arabia when they, you know, when Reigns technically actually won the cage match. They could have just gone with that as the finish, and they'd be done with Lesnar, and you would have had Roman Reigns defending the Universal title, and he would have had more heat on him for being the Universal Champion instead of whatever it is that we're getting right now.
Is there any possibility that this is all going according to WWE's plan? When they sat down in January or February, and did they say, okay, we're going to have Lesnar lose or Lesnar win at WrestleMania, we're going to have him win again at the Greatest Royal Rumble? You know, if he goes off to do UFC, that's great. We'll keep him as champion. It doesn't matter. We're not worried about getting the title off of him before he goes off to fight in UFC. Is there any chance that all of this was actually plotted out at some point in the past by WWE, or is this all coming on them very quickly and they're having to constantly juggle and figure out what they're going to do next?
That would assume that their plan was to have people crap on the main event of WrestleMania, then have them crap on the main event of Backlash, then have them crap on and have them continually crap on Roman Reigns, who is their who's supposed to be their top star. So I'm guessing whatever the plan was, that part wasn't part of the plan. I would be, again, surprised if Lesnar doesn't wrestle at SummerSlam, because it seems like they're, you know, if he doesn't, they've been making a huge mistake. But if they want to just keep the belt that doesn't mean a whole lot anymore on Lesnar going into UFC, I'm sure Dana White's not going to mind.
So the original multi-man number one contender match scheduled for Extreme Rules was scrapped a couple weeks ago by Kurt Angle, which now leaves us with an Extreme Rules card that reads as follows. AJ Styles versus Rusev for the WWE title. Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt against the B-Team for the Raw Tag Team Championship. Alexa Bliss versus Nia Jax for the Raw Women's Championship in an Extreme Rules match. Carmella versus Asuka in a SmackDown Women's Championship match. The Bludgeon Brothers against the reunited Team Hell No for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. Dolph Ziggler against Seth Rollins in a 30-minute Iron Man match for the Intercontinental title. Roman Reigns versus Lashley in singles action. Jeff Hardy versus Shinsuke Nakamura for the United States title. And Finn Balor versus Baron Corbin. That is 9 matches so far. We still have an episode of Raw and an episode of SmackDown to go. One of these matches could, of course, be moved to the pre-show as well. I first want to touch on Alexa Bliss versus Nia Jax. Extreme Rules match. For an Extreme Rules pay-per-view thus far, it's the only match on here aside from the Iron Man match that has an Extreme Rules-related stipulation. It's also the only match that has Ronda Rousey promised to be at ringside despite her 30-day suspension from Raw General Manager Kurt Angle. Alexa versus Nia doesn't really feel like it needs an Extreme Rules stipulation, but if you've been watching long enough, you can kind of see from a mile away that that stipulation seems only attached to allow Ronda Rousey to get involved in a legal manner in this match. Pat, what role do you see Ronda Rousey playing as she's promised to be at ringside for Bliss versus Jax?
Yeah, she's going to get involved. I don't know what they're going to do because I suspect they want to get to Ronda Rousey and Alexa Bliss. Maybe Ronda is going to help Nia win the title, and Ronda and Alexa will be a non-title match. I'm guessing Mickie James will also be interfering because this is Extreme Rules. I would think that somehow Alexa is going to keep the title. However, I have a tendency to be wrong about these sort of things, and I don't know that. And you talked about whether they have a plan for Brock Lesnar. I don't know that they have any sort of a special. I'm sure they have a plan for Ronda Rousey. I'm not sure what their plan is for the Raw Women's title, then.
Looking at Carmella versus Asuka on the women's side on SmackDown, that is a title match as well. Can WWE book it so Carmella wins again and retains the title and not have Asuka lose a lot more of her luster? Because she's already lost to Carmella once, thanks to the distraction by James Ellsworth. This is coming on the heels of Asuka's streak being broken at WrestleMania. Is there a way to have Carmella defeat Asuka here and keep the title, but also keep Asuka relatively strong in the eyes of the fans? Or will another loss to Carmella be too damaging for Asuka, at least in the short term?
Whatever's left of Asuka, the Asuka that ran roughshod over NXT is not with us anymore. They did a terrible job last time of coming up with a credible finish for this match, I'm not sure we're going to get a better finish this time. I don't have high hopes. I mean, I'm looking at this card, okay, Greg, and I think this is another one of those situations where WWE has a perfectly good 3-hour pay-per-view hiding inside a 5-hour time slot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it doesn't look like, to me, a really strong card. I mean, you've got the B-team challenging for the Raw Tag Team title match. They've been entertaining, but they're a lower card act. You've got Reigns versus Lashley, which I don't probably the best use of either guy at this point. The Bludgeon Brothers against Team Hell No. You've got Daniel Bryan hidden in a tag team with Kane, which is, nice for a couple of week chuckle, but you'd hope he doesn't get stuck there for weeks. You've got the newly minted Rusev, who's now a WWE title contender, taking on AJ Styles. Does Rusev's ascent surprise you? Were you thinking that WWE was just going to go against the grain of the fans and leave Rusev in the mid-card, or did you think there was a chance that WWE would listen to the fans? That's what this is. I don't think this was ever WWE's intent to have Rusev in a title match on a pay-per-view. I think this was them either listening to or being broken by the groundswell for Rusev to get a bigger push. And here we are. Are you surprised that they actually listened to the fans and gave him this opportunity?
Yeah, I'm just guessing that whoever they originally planned to put against AJ Styles was injured or something. So I don't know. Plus, I suspect. I mean, this is going to be a good show. I expect we're really going to enjoy Dolph Ziggler and Seth Rollins. I'm expecting good things out of AJ and Rusev, and you know Hardy and Nakamura to a lesser extent. But I don't know. I thought it was going to be Samoa Joe, and I either expected WWE to keep Rusev in the mid card, or maybe they could finally make him a babyface and start moving him up. This seemed kind of out of nowhere, but whatever they have planned for SummerSlam for AJ Styles is probably going to be pretty good.
We'll go back to the phones now and hear from Frank. Frank is calling us, I believe, from the Dominican Republic. Frank, you're like Ted DiBiase, making his seasonal residences in different places. You're calling us from all these fantastic places around the world.
You know, and I would try to do the DiBiase laugh, but I feel like I would just screw it up. So I'm going to avoid that.
Yeah, he's one of a kind on that.
Actually, that wasn't so bad. What do you guys think?
That's pretty good.
Bad. I'll give you an 8 out of 10 on that one.
Yeah, it's funny. And it's funny when my girls go through my phone, because I have on Amazon, I have all the themes. Once in a while, they'll actually go to Ted DiBiase, and they'll be like, "Daddy, that's the Million Dollar Man." So, I feel like I've raised my children, well at this point. So,
absolutely.
Let me just say before I talk, I'm really happy, Pat, that you're on tonight, because you guys, between the two of you and Wade, you were like the first three voices last year when I got into the PW Torch podcast and stuff like that. You guys were like the first voices that I got into. So a year later now, being a contributor doing the preview shows, this is kind of special for me tonight. I'm really glad you're on, Pat, and I was looking forward to this as soon as Greg made the announcement. So nice to talk to you tonight.
Well, thank you very much, Frank. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. And I'm glad, Mary, I'm glad the baby's doing well and everything. I think about that a lot. Once you made the announcement that you and your wife had the baby, with three, it certainly becomes an adventure, especially around sleep time. So hopefully she's sleeping for you right now, and hopefully you're averaging more than 5 hours a night, Pat. I really do.
sometimes it happens. So
there you go. Hey. So I actually want to pick up on one thing you guys didn't talk about, and that was Bailey and Sasha last week with the segment with Dr. Shelby. My personal opinion on that is that they completely dropped the ball. Now, I was happy when they saw Dr. Shelby. Greg, I saw you tweet out that you were excited to see him, and I was excited to see him as well. And, I still think he's going into the Hall of Fame at some point. But I really think they took the segment that they did 2 weeks ago, which was really good, and I think they completely trashed it for whatever reason. I don't know what their motivation is. So I guess I kind of want you guys to expand on that. And I'm just wondering, do you think that they're marginalizing the two of them right now, Bailey and Sasha, because they want all eyes on Ronda Rousey and maybe Alexa Bliss at this point, and Bailey and Sasha are kind of the victims of that? Do you think that's kind of what's going on right now with those two?
I was disappointed by those segments last week. I actually thought we would get a lot more than we got, so I guess maybe we should be thankful that they were two very short segments and not anything more, because these are the kind of segments where WWE likes to flex their quote-unquote creative muscle, and a lot of times it falls flat on their face, like it did with Bailey and Banks. So it just didn't have the magic of Team Hell No, which was the original work that Dr. Shelby did in WWE, although I did get a cheap kick out of Bailey and Sasha Banks imitating each other. There was something to that that I kind of got a chuckle out of. It wasn't good. In as far as marginalizing them and putting them in the background in favor of Rousey and the others, I don't think they're doing it purposely, but I think certainly a lot of the creative attention is going to Rousey, Bliss, and Jackson. I can understand that. Rousey is their star. She's the crossover. She's got the mainstream appeal that has the possibility of bringing in newer fans. And it's almost like, you know, a really bad timing that Bayley and Banks are having the apex of their feud at the same time WWE is trying to keep Rousey in a visible position. That's not to say that you can't have two very viable feuds in the women's division. You know, we see that with the men all the time. But I think this women's evolution has only come so far where they've got the attention on the big feud, and kind of anything else is sort of left by the wayside, which is what we're getting. Pat, jump in with your thoughts on Bayley Banks, the segments from last week, and you know, WWE's creative attention to that compared to Rousey stuff.
Well, actually, you know what it reminded me of, Greg, and Frank. You know, I'm thinking back to the movie The Godfather 2, where, you know, where Michael and Fredo are in Havana, and Michael, you know, discovers kind of by accident that Fredo has betrayed him for, you know, has betrayed him and been working with Johnny Ola and Roth, and he holds him, and, you know, Eddie grabs him and gives him the kiss of death, and says, "Fredo, you broke my heart." And then the next week they were in Friends therapy together. That's what I remember. That's what I remember. I mean, it's you know, it's not, wrestling is not what it used to be, and yeah, I mean, they you know, somehow they got the idea that Dr. Shelby should be brought back, and this is how they did it. So,
and I think Godfather 2 did the therapy better, but I don't think that's really in dispute. Frank, we're gonna go back to you right after this. We're gonna take a break and come back with more here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Pat McNeil and Greg Parks back with you here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com. We are on the phone with Frank, who is calling in with some questions and comments about happenings in the wrestling world. And Frank, we'll go back to you for a follow-up to what Pat and I talked about with Bayley and Sasha, or another question.
Well, this is what gets me, okay? And I don't know why I'm going to this, but I remember as a kid, all right, when Paul Orndorff turned on Hulk Hogan, all right? As a 12-year-old kid at that point, I was heartbroken because I liked Mr. Wonderful. That was about the time I started watching wrestling. So, you know, Mr. Wonderful was one of my favorites. And, you know, my feelings were hurt at that point. And I just wonder, you know, in this day and age where, you know, society is very sensitive and we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, you know, you have this great turn by Bayley last week or 2 weeks ago, and I thought she did a really good job. Now, the crowd didn't react in the way that I think WWE anticipated. And I know, Greg, I know I called in last week about this. The crowd didn't anticipate that way. Do you get the sense that, you know, maybe, oh, no, you know, we hurt some little girl's feelings. You know, we hurt some little girl that wears a Bayley shirt and I'm a hugger. And, you know, we have to do something to make everything okay. You know, we have to have this therapy session to make sure that everybody gets along. You know, do you think that they're trying to cater to that kind of audience? Because I, as a wrestling fan, would have rather have seen Bayley say, no, you know what, I'm sick and tired of you, you know, holding me down and all this kind of stuff. I'm just going to be, you know, a bad girl and just beat you up. And I want to have a match with you at Extreme Rules. I want to have a kendo stick match and use the kendo stick, which, guess what, I couldn't use last year against Alexa Bliss. Do you think that they're trying to cater to that audience, or am I reading too much into that, guys? What do you think?
I think of Vince McMahon's constant mantra that we're here to put smiles on people's faces. And that's the first thing I thought of, Frank, when you talked about that. And for better or worse, you know, that is WWE's mantra. They want everybody leaving a show happy. And, you know, if that means that they have to blunt these turns so that it's not jarring and it's not going to give kids nightmares, I guess. You know, maybe that's what they're doing, and taking a more lighthearted tone, like we saw this week in Therapy, could be their way of doing it. I don't know if I would say they're necessarily catering to that audience. I think they're certainly mindful of it. But yeah, I think the days of those kind of turns, unfortunately, are over. And I say unfortunately because those are the kind of turns that really bring out the emotion in the viewer, in the person watching, and in the people in the crowd. And I think now the emotion they're going for is awe, where you see, like, they'll capture a near fall, or, you know, it'll be a reaction after a really good match that fans have, or a surprising result or something like that. And that's the emotion they're trying to capture, rather than the emotion of, you know, betrayal because your favorite wrestler is not who you thought they were because they turned heel or something like that. Pat, are we on the right track here, do you think?
Yeah, I think so, although I've got to point out that, you know, the number one Bayley fan, Izzy, was on Twitter after Bayley turned on Sasha and was going, "Wow, this is great. I love Bayley so much." You know, so I think the wrestling fans get it. But I think there likely is some, you know, there likely is pressure, internal and external, because, you know, we got to keep the sponsors happy. We don't want to do anything that will upset them. We don't want to do anything, you know, crazy violent like we used to that will upset the kids, which will piss off Phil Mushnick, you know, and then get lots of negative stories written about us. So, yeah, I think there's some of that in there. Absolutely.
You know, and it's sad because, you know, Pat and Greg, it's that emotion that got you invested in matches years ago. It's that emotion that got me invested in wanting to see Hogan fight Orndorff, you know, in a cage match on Saturday night's main event. It's that emotion that got me to see, you know, Randy Savage turn on Hulk Hogan and want me to see the two of them fight at WrestleMania, et cetera, et cetera. And listen, I know I'm beating a dead horse, but, you know, that's the school in which I grew up with, so it is what it is. Let me shift over to the top of the card with Monday Night Raw. You guys were talking about that a little bit with Reigns Lesnar, and I was reading an article in Bleacher Report. I guess Meltzer is saying that the idea is to have Reigns Lesnar at WrestleMania and Braun Strowman cash in. Now, before I get to that, I'm really confused as to the dynamic of the top of the card at Monday Night Raw, and I hate to beat on Roman Reigns because I feel like I do it every other week, and I really just don't want to do it, but unfortunately that's what happens. And I called Wade last week and I told him about it, and I'll tell you guys about it. If they're trying to frame Roman Reigns as a babyface, they're doing an absolutely terrible job, because I literally wanted to punch the TV last week when he goes, "Oh, I didn't think I was going to lose to the Revival," and, "Oh, not to make excuses, but I had the world's worst tag team partner last week in Bobby Lashley." Are you kidding me? That's how you frame a top babyface? And then with Lashley, I mean, if they're trying to have Lashley be the guy beat Roman Reigns, they're certainly not framing him that way, because they didn't present him in a way that makes me want to see him beat Roman Reigns. So, honestly, I don't understand the top of the Raw card. I don't understand the dynamic. I don't understand what they're going for. You know, Greg, you and I have talked about it, and then obviously I'll throw it to Pat this week. Ultimately, I want to see Seth Rollins. I don't think that's what's going to happen. My alternate would be Braun Strowman calling his shot and cashing in the briefcase. But I just don't know. I just don't get what they're doing. I don't get the dynamics of everything. So with all of that, let's try to make an omelet out of those scrambled eggs if you could, because I know I threw a lot at you guys, and I don't get it. I really don't. I'm sorry. I apologize, but I'm just confused with the top of the Raw card right now.
Pat?
Sure. I remember, sure, why not? I remember, you know, I'm watching Elimination Chamber, and I'm watching this you know, great job that they're doing of setting up Braun Strowman as a killer, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, this is easy. You have Reigns, you know, Reigns goes evil. He beats Lesnar at WrestleMania. Strowman chases him for a year. Strowman beats Reigns at WrestleMania 35. Yay, everybody's happy. That, I mean, that just seemed like an incredibly simple way to do it. I think that Vince McMahon for 3 years has been trying to deal with Roman Reigns not being as popular as he wants him to be, and the you know, whatever long-term plans he's had, he's been changing them, you know, probably weekly or monthly to try and do something which will get Roman Reigns over in the way that he wants, and it's not working, and it's not working, and it's not working because he's going about it all wrong. I mean, I think if you just had Roman Reigns, you know, doing exactly what he's doing now, being an unintentional a-hole, being a full a-hole, you'd have people cheering him eventually. So just do it. Just do it. Just turn him heel like we've been begging you to do for 3 years. Watch the fans cheer him anyway, and then you've got the reaction you want.
Just to add into that, as far as Lashley and Reigns on Raw right now, I think they're also going about this storyline the wrong way because they're asking Reigns and Lashley to do these in-ring interviews that are not either man's strong suit. It's not Lashley's strong suit to sit there and talk and go back and forth with Roman Reigns. It's not Roman Reigns' strong suit to stand in the ring for 10, 15 minutes and go back and forth with Lashley. And you add on to it the poor scripting of these guys, which makes them sound completely unnatural. So, you know, you combine those two, and I think they're really going about the entire storyline the wrong way, which is just making it worse.
Or you know, maybe the other possibility is maybe Reigns and Lashley have been jerks to the writers backstage or something we don't know about, so they're deliberately writing them this way to make them look bad, which if that's
revenge.
The case, it's definitely more entertaining than the Raw storylines if that's the case. Yeah, plus I love a good conspiracy theory, so maybe that's it. I don't know, but I think that what happens is that there's a plan in place, and then Vince McMahon feels like he has to change it every couple of weeks because they're booing Roman Reigns. I mean, my God, what do we have to do to get this guy over? You know, well, and the answer is not have Vince McMahon book him, and that's not going to happen.
No. Frank, back to
you. The answer is simple.
Frank, you're really breaking up. We can't hear you.
Okay, well,
right,
it was
we'll
great
put,
talking to you, Frank. Yeah.
We'll put Frank on hold for a minute. We'll come back to him and see if his reception is any better. But anyway, that gives us the perfect time to take a break. We'll be back with more with Pat McNeil here on Wrestling Night in America on PW.com.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at PWPodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Back with more Wrestling Night in America here on pwtorchlivecast.com. And if you missed it at the outset of the show, next week is Extreme Rules, so we'll be going on the air hopefully around 11 o'clock, hopefully sooner actually, but hopefully at the latest 11 o'clock Eastern. Whenever Extreme Rules gets off the air, we'll be going on the air with our Extreme Rules post-show on Wrestling Night in America. And then the week after that will be a takeover by Andrew Socek and Mike McMahon, who co-host the Impact Wrestling Livecast on Thursday nights after Impact. They will take over Wrestling Night in America after Slammiversary, Impact Wrestling's pay-per-view. So they will be along for that. And then it's back to 8 p.m. Eastern, our regularly scheduled time, on Sunday, July 29th, 2018. But right now I am here with Pat McNeil, and we're going to talk a little bit about that very Impact Wrestling pay-per-view Slammiversary. Right now it is scheduled for Austin Aries versus Moose for the Impact title. Madison Rain against Sue Young for the Knockouts Championship. We also have an international four-way. Ishimori versus Johnny Impact versus Phoenix versus Rich Swann. Pentagon Jr. takes on Sammy Callahan in a mask versus hair match. Brian Cage, Matt Sydal in an X Division title match. And we have a House of Hardcore rules match, Eddie Edwards versus Tommy Dreamer. We also have two more episodes of Impact to go where more matches or stipulations may be announced. Pat, I'm really having a hard time with Moose as a top guy in Impact, especially being a guy to challenge Austin Aries for the Impact Wrestling title at a pay-per-view. Impact does so few pay-per-views. I just don't think Moose is there yet. You know, I think he's got a lot of athleticism for a guy his size. You know, he still struggles on interviews. He still struggles to me to exude that personality, to get it over to the crowd. Problem is, you know, outside of Moose, there really aren't a lot of other options, I don't think, to challenge Austin Aries for the title at a pay-per-view. You could do Sammy Callahan, who was coming off a successful feud with Eddie Edwards. You could do Johnny Impact, who I think was missing from the previous taping, so it would have been hard to do a build for that. You know, is Moose the kind of the choice by attrition in Impact to get this title match?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, they, you know, Eddie Edwards has been busy doing stuff. I mean, Pentagon Jr., they could do that again, but I think that they don't want to stretch it out that far. Plus, it's Impact. They're struggling. I mean, they're trying to get some sort of stability, and try to have five or six top guys and you know, sort of build everything around them. Moose signed a contract. He signed it, you know, before the ownership change, and apparently. And they like him. I don't know that he's the guy either. I think the guy is probably I think the next big challenger is Brian Cage. They just haven't set that up well enough. So I mean, they've already got Cage going for the X Division title. I think that this is more like an indie promotion where you're just figuring out guys who are going to show up and are not going to get signed by somebody else.
Yeah, that's the one thing Moose has going for him is he's under contract to Impact. He's not one of these guys who, yeah, he does Impact, but he does all these other major promotions too. Pentagon is on Lucha Underground. Some of the other guys are as well. You know, they Impact is almost feels like a stopover for these guys. It doesn't feel like their home promotion where Impact Wrestling fans can get invested in these guys, whereas Moose at least has that and at least has that feeling. Edwards versus Tommy Dreamer in this House of Hardcore rules match. Edwards coming off a storyline with Sammy Callahan. This is a side of Eddie Edwards we haven't seen before. You know, he was always the good wrestler, not necessarily a lot of personality. A lot of times you have that deer in the headlights look. The stuff with Sammy Callahan has been really hit or miss. I think, how do you see Eddie Edwards coming out of that? Is he a lot stronger for having come through that feud, or do you think that feud did damage to him because it was so over the top and maybe hokey at times?
I think it did some damage to him, but they wanted to take him out of the title picture, so they needed something important for him to do. But now you've got an actual storyline where Eddie Edwards has lost his mind, and the evidence that they're giving that he's lost his mind is he thinks his wife is having an affair with Tommy Dreamer, which actually is pretty funny when you think about it that way. But
Pointed out the absurdity of that last week on TV.
Oh yeah. It's like not to talk him down, but that's kind of what it is. So it'll be a fine match. It's a way to keep, you know, and this association's good for Tommy Dreamer. It keeps keeps the House of Hardcore brand alive, which is what he needs. I do kind of want to see Eddie Edwards as a crazy badass, and I just don't know that I don't know that this match with Tommy Dreamer is necessarily the best venue.
Madison Rayne against Sue Young for the Knockouts Championship is a bit of a surprise, given that Madison Rayne first came back to do commentary on Knockouts matches and add a little bit of a Knockout perspective to those matches. She's gradually gotten more and more involved, and now she's challenging Sue Young for the Knockouts Championship. Madison Rayne sort of represents the old guard of the Knockouts at a time when you have Allie, you have Taya Valkyrie, you have Kira Hogan, you have Tessa Blanchard all breaking through as part of the new guard in Impact Wrestling as part of the Knockouts division. Are you surprised that Impact has not only brought Madison Rayne back, but you know she's not in this role of a veteran who's being used to get other people over? Here she is in an important spot, as we talked about earlier, in one of the few pay-per-views that Impact Wrestling does, and she's challenging for the Impact title. Does it surprise you her positioning in Impact since her return?
No, because this is a pay-per-view, and for a big pay-per-view, you want to put on the biggest matches you can, and frankly, Madison Rayne and Sue Young is, you know, it's not like they have a bigger women's match that they're sort of hiding. I mean, they have better women's matches, yeah, maybe. But this is going to be interesting, and it has the potential to be a lot of fun. I enjoy Sue Young's character, and they wanted to do something kind of fresh, and Madison Rayne, even if she's a short timer, I mean, this does freshen things up a bit.
Yeah, and I think the issue with the Tessa Blanchards and the Kira Hogan is they're all kind of establishing themselves. Like I said, there's this new guard of Knockouts in there, and
right.
You know, maybe Impact thinks it would be too soon to rush them into a title match. They want to kind of build them. So from that point of view, I certainly understand. Let's go back to Frank, see if we can reconnect with him. Frank, are you back with us?
Maybe I should be the million-dollar man because I can get better reception, you know? I mean, I can get the Sheridan down here to get better Wi-Fi, but, you know, hey, what are you going to do, right?
Now.
Since you guys jumped over to Impact, I'll talk about that. I watched the show this week. I actually thought it was a halfway decent show. I think you watched it on delay, Greg. I think you picked up a little bit later. I know we kind of switched roles this week, even with SmackDown. But I really enjoyed Cage and Kongo Kong. I thought it was better than probably it needed to be and stuff like that. Madison Rayne, I actually agree with Pat. I have no problem with Madison Rayne getting this run right now. Especially with Sue Young holding the title. You know, I just thought of this, and I don't know if it's a possibility. I wonder if Allie could be heading towards a heel turn, you know, especially with Rosemary out. You know, she talked about the dark side and stuff like that. I wonder if that was a cryptic heel turn, you know, or a possibility of a heel turn with her where she goes against Madison at some point. And then I guess the other points from Impact, I agree with you. I don't think Moose is the guy. I don't think he's getting the championship, but he could be the one. He and Brian Cage could actually switch roles. I don't know what their next big, Bound for Glory or something like that? Is that what they have?
Probably, yeah. Bound for Glory.
Down the line. I don't know what their next. Is that what it is? The October pay-per-view, is it Bound for Glory? Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Maybe they switch roles where Moose kind of does the job for Austin Aries and they're rewarded by giving him the X Division championship. And that's where Brian Cage gets the world championship. So what do you guys think about those bullet points I brought up with Allie and Brian Cage and Moose at this point?
An Allie heel turn. I think you probably want to look at the dynamics of the heel face roster that you have right now and see if that makes a lot of sense. You've got Kira Hogan as a babyface. You've got Katarina now, who comes in as a babyface. So she evens things up a little more. But then you've got Sue Young as a heel. You've got Tessa Blanchard as a heel. You've got Taya as a heel, although I think she can be a babyface too. So I think that's really more of a situation of, you know, and we see WWE do this to the women as well, is where's your need? Is your need on the babyface side or is your need on the heel side? Because I think, you know, Allie could turn heel, and that would be a pretty big deal because of her character and how she's been portrayed. If she does turn heel, that you'd want to get certainly some mileage out of that. You know, with Cage, I certainly think that he's a guy who I look at as being on the cusp of a title contender, the Impact Wrestling title. Thing to keep in mind now is you've got July through October with no pay-per-view. You're probably going to have those landmark episodes of Impact where they are pay-per-view-like, and Impact spends a lot of time building them up, and you're probably going to do title matches on those shows. So Cage might not be next in line for a title match, but I think he's a guy you have to consider for Bound for Glory. But, you know, we have to look at just if they don't jump into Cage versus Aries or Cage versus Moose right after this pay-per-view, that could just mean that the next feud is going to be one that's going to be blown off at the next big TV event that they do, because it's a long time to build a feud between, especially in this era, between July and October, and expect to put on that title match at the apex of its storyline. So, Pat, on Allie and Cage.
Let's see. Allie turning heel. I suppose that's possible. I hadn't given that much thought, but you know, it depends on where they want to go and when they think Rosemary's going to be back, I guess. You know, Brian Cage, yeah, I think this would be a stronger show, obviously, if Brian Cage were in Moose's spot, but again maybe they're saving that because Bound for Glory is going to be a bigger deal than Slammiversary. I would not be a bit surprised. I think they brought in Brian Cage to be a top guy, so I think we're going to get there sooner rather than later.
That's not to say Cage can't win the X Division Championship, though. I mean, he can always win it from Seidel. And, I mean, you could have the proverbial title versus title match, and on the way, you know, because I know that's a couple of months, I mean, you got Johnny Morrison coming back. Or Johnny Morrison, listen to me. Johnny Impact coming back, you know, and I don't know who else you. I don't know who else. Maybe you throw Grado a bone. I don't know. You want to do that? And
no, I don't want to do that.
That's okay. That's okay. Greg, I agree with Greg. That's okay. We don't have to do that.
He does have cool music, though. I do have to say, and. I don't know, you know, whoever else you want. By the way, what did you guys think of Killer Cross getting his debut against Fala Ba? I thought that was a little bit odd. What did you think of that debut?
You know, he reminded me, and I think I tweeted about this, he kind of reminded me of Nails, just that whole character and the chokeout finish similar to Nails at the sleeper and just that whole – the whole character where he's just like – got that blank, that thousand-yard stare, and just he's got – there's nothing inside of him that's good. You know, he doesn't have a heart or, you know, however you want to phrase it. I think there was some – I think he was hurt a little bit by the fact that the reveal was done, and then the next week they did that little promo with him, that vignette, and then there was nothing, and then they had his debut. So I think waiting so long to debut him after the reveal hurt a little bit, but – certainly, Impact needs all the Impact players it can get, and I think Killer Cross can be an Impact player for them.
I agree.
What was that?
Pat, I thought that was you bringing
that
the soundboard back from your own living room or something.
No.
No, guys, that was my iPhone actually. That was Aaron was texting me because
I thought maybe the soundboard lived or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
No. Because my Caitlin actually has something going on with her knee, and she took pictures of it. So, you know, one thing you learn when you're a husband, you become a doctor, you become an electrician, you become a plumber, you become a chiropractor, you become everything. You become, right, Pat?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
I do, yes.
Unbelievable. Hey, let me let you guys get to the rest of the show. And once again, I'm really happy to have spoken to both of you tonight. And Greg, I'll probably talk to you next week. And Pat, all my blessings to you and your wife and your daughter. I hope everything goes well.
Thank you, Frank. It's good to talk to you.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You, Frank.
A lot,
talk
Pat.
To you next week.
You got it, boss.
All right, so there goes Frank, and here comes a commercial. But then we'll be right back with more of your phone calls here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Wrestling Night in America rolls on here on pwtorchlivecast.com. Greg Parks and Pat McNeil with you. And go to our last call of the evening. It is a Skype call. Hello, sir. You are on, or ma'am. On the live cast, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hello?
Hello, you are on Wrestling Night in America.
Go ahead, caller.
I'm wondering if this is Craig.
It's the Black Scorpion,
not...
run.
No. All right, I'll run away from it by muting them for now, and we'll go back to them in a few more minutes. But talking a little bit now about Raw and SmackDown from this past week, that it was certainly an up and down show on Raw. We had the Bayley Bank stuff, which we talked about with Dr. Shelby. We had Braun Strowman and Kevin Owens advancing their story a week after Braun Strowman tipped over Kevin Owens' car. This time he tipped over a porta potty, which contained Kevin Owens inside, leaving Kevin Owens injured and covered in a blue substance. So this is what Braun Strowman does. I mean, this is what attracted the fans to him in the first place. Wade Keller has made the argument that Strowman is coming off heelish here because Owens is really extending an olive branch of friendship, and Strowman is destroying his car, and now he's pushing him off the stage in a porta potty. Where do you fall on Braun Strowman's hijinks here?
Well, I don't think he's coming off heelish. I think he's coming off as a WWE babyface. You know, Steve Austin was this awful person to people for years, and people cheered him. The Rock was mean and insulted people. I mean, you know, this is wrestling. I'm sorry, but I mean, they started out with Strowman as a heel doing all this crap to people, and people cheered him. So why bother? You know, so why bother changing it? You've got people cheering him.
And Kevin Owens is a heel. You know, he can be extending the olive branch and acting like a babyface, but we've kind of seen Kevin Owens be not so, you know, believable before. He's done that kind of underhanded thing before, so there's no reason for Braun Strowman to believe that Kevin Owens is being serious and wanting to be friends with him, and you know, messing with Kevin Owens is par for the course for Braun Strowman. And like you said, I think that's the big thing to remember here is this is the kind of stuff that got Braun Strowman over as a babyface when he was a heel. So WWE's thinking is, why get away from that? Why change something that's working? And I think they're on the right path. And I fall more on your side, Pat, than I do Wade's for this one, as far as Braun Strowman and whether or not he's coming off as a heel.
That's good. I taught you well. That's I'm glad to hear that.
You did. Under the Pat McNeil learning tree, certainly. we also have seen over the past few weeks a extended push for the Revival and Mojo Rawley. The Revival, just by virtue of sharing the same space as Roman Reigns, they're being pushed. But you know, getting a victory over Reigns and Lashley, even though it was more of a storyline feeding into the Reigns-Lashley feud, they still got the victory. And then last week in the rubber match, they were disqualified. So they didn't lose to Lashley and Reigns. And the Revival has been on Main Event, and they've been off TV and I think a lot of fans who adored them in NXT had given up on any kind of push that they might get on the main roster. There's certainly an opening on the main roster for a heel tag team, because right now it's the B team challenging Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt. And that is not a gimmick that is destined to have a lot of legs, I don't think. Authors of Pain right now are also being put back into the mix after being off TV for quite some time. So in the long term, they're probably going to get the big heel positioning. But what do you make of the positioning of the Revival here? Is there something more to this than just being a means to an end to get over the Lashley versus Reigns feud?
I don't think there's much more to it than that. I mean, I think that they're building the Revival up into something where, you know, maybe at SummerSlam they get a match for the tag team titles against the Leaders of Worlds B team feud. I mean, it's going to be either them or the Authors of Pain. I just think, you know, if there is a side effect for it, it's making the Revival a credible tag team again, because they seem to go to great lengths to not do it for several months.
And even if this does end up with Revival going back to main event, at least it gives some credibility to those matches that are on main event, which I'm assuming some people watch. I certainly don't, but somebody out there must. Which, you know, even in matches like that, it helps to have some semblance of credibility, I would assume.
You would think.
The other one is Mojo Rawley, who has been embroiled in a feud with No Way Jose, and Rawley is I think doing a nice job as a heel and a good balance for No Way Jose's trickeration. But what kind of legs does Mojo Rawley have at the heels? Is this just an undercard thing, or is if he impresses enough, does he have a lot of upward mobility? And I always go back to something Rob Naylor on Twitter would say. He worked backstage creatively for NXT for quite a while, and he said, some of the best heel promos I saw in NXT were Mojo Rawley, and this was at the time when Mojo was this babyface that had just gotten called up to the main roster, and you know, all this exuberance and all this energy, and I think it took people by surprise to read that Rawley had these kind of heel promos in him. And now you're seeing some pretty decent heel work by Rawley in the time that he's been given. So is this a spot where he can impress even just to get up to an Elias level, maybe not necessarily a main event level by the end of the year, but where he can, you know, show off and really have some upward mobility in this position?
Oh, I think Mojo Rawley is a much better heel than he is a babyface. I thought he was just a nuisance as a babyface. They obviously have some confidence in him. They put him over Bobby Roode last night at Madison Square Garden. So, you know, I think that we'll get something maybe on the pre-show of Extreme Rules with him and No Way Jose, and finally wrap up this whatever this feud has been.
Over on SmackDown this past week, we had The Miz answering Jeff Hardy's U.S. title open challenge. Jeff Hardy won to retain. Sanity attacked The New Day. Asuka went to a double countout with James Ellsworth and Team Hell No over the Usos. I thought the Usos were babyfaces, and here they were being used as heels to get over Team Hell No. What did you make of that change of course by the Usos?
Not a whole lot of tag teams on SmackDown. I mean, Plus, you know, if you wanted to have Team Hell No in a main event spot, you had to sort of have credible opposition for them. And I mean, the Usos, if nothing else, are very credible.
Sanity versus New Day makes too much sense because it's three-man feud versus three-man feud. New Day has, I don't know that they've gotten complacent. I think they're still probably enjoying a lot of what they're doing, and a lot of it is entertaining to a certain percentage of the fan base. Sanity is, in a lot of ways, the complete opposite of New Day character-wise. Do you see Sanity being able to bring out something in New Day that we haven't seen in a while, and maybe since the Usos feud where they had that Hell in a Cell match that was widely applauded? Can this feud really bring out another side to New Day and maybe make them a little more relevant than they've been?
Yeah, maybe give them a little bit more of an edge, as much as you can have being on a PG show. I mean, I think part of the problem was, you know, they killed off really they dropped New Day and the Usos for the benefit of the Bludgeon Brothers, which I guess that's understandable because, I mean, you got to switch things up sometime. You need something for the New Day to do. You need something for Sanity to do. They're three-man teams. It just sort of, you know, it just sort of sets itself up. Now, obviously, the issue was, you know, Sanity had become babyfaces on NXT because they, you know, they had gotten themselves over to that level, and there were a lot of good heel teams, so they did that. They're starting over again on the SmackDown roster as heels, and I mean, I think, you know, they're all talented. This should help all six of them if they're given some time.
The reunion of Team Hell No has garnered a variety of reactions from the WWE audience. There are those who just love nostalgia and think that that was a great time in WWE TV, and it was one of WWE's more creatively successful storylines with Daniel Bryan and the Kane pairing, so people are excited to see it. There are those who think that this is a continued waste of Daniel Bryan. You know, he comes back and gets put in this with Big Cass, which really doesn't allow Daniel Bryan to show off all that he can do. He's doing a job carrying Big Cass for most of it, and now he's put in a tag team feud with the Bludgeon Brothers along with Kane. Is this a gross misuse of Daniel Bryan by WWE, do you think, or is it an appropriate use of Daniel Bryan, I guess, is a pretty simple question.
To an extent, it's an appropriate use for Daniel Bryan because he's on SmackDown. He's going to be a babyface. This is, you know, this is not really in those parts are not really in dispute. You know, AJ Styles is the top guy, and Daniel Bryan right now, you know, he's back after, you know, after a lot of concussions and a lot of doubt as to whether he'd ever come back. I mean, putting him in tag matches is a good way to, you know, is a good way to keep him in that regular role and get him used to being on the road and wrestling on television every week without risking him too heavily. Although, you know, but it depends on what they do with the Bludgeon Brothers, I guess. But yeah, I mean, here's the thing: where do you put Daniel Bryan? Do you put him above Jeff Hardy? Yeah, maybe. Yeah, you could. Do you put him above AJ Styles? No, really, he shouldn't be. And then who else are your top babyfaces after that? I love it. The idea that Daniel Bryan should be the number one babyface, I'm sympathetic to that. But realistically, unless Daniel Bryan is proven to be 100% and is going to be going full time, that's probably not the best option for him.
How much of a foregone conclusion is it that we see The Miz versus Daniel Bryan at SummerSlam?
I don't know if they do it at SummerSlam. They announced the MSG card for Christmas week, and Daniel Bryan versus Miz is on there. So maybe they're going to do that at Royal Rumble, which actually might be the excuse for keeping Daniel Bryan out of the Rumble match this year.
That's assuming Bryan re-signs, which I don't think he has yet, correct?
No, he has not. And I'm glad you asked, because I probably should have brought that up anyway. I mean, I see the people on Twitter going, well, Daniel Bryan, you know, he needs to break out of WWE. He needs to go to New Japan. He needs to go to Ring of Honor. He needs to set his own schedule. He needs to be free from the WWE lifestyle. Daniel Bryan got what he wanted. He's wrestling. And plus, people are forgetting that there's another television show, which WWE owns a piece of, called Total Bellas, which is very much reliant on Daniel Bryan and his wife. Daniel Bryan can't exactly go to New Japan and expect to still be a character on Total Bellas. Plus, you know, I mean, Daniel's featured on that show. He's getting paid for that as well. Plus, you know, I mean, to raise a child, he's going to want the 50 to 100 dates a year instead of without all the travel, you know, the travel in New Japan is going to be worse than the travel he's doing with WWE. So I think he stays. I think unless there's an awful lot of money involved, I don't even think it's a close call.
Do you buy the idea that WWE is putting him in these feuds with Big Cass and now with Team Hell No so as to not drive up his value if he were to leave?
I would want him to. I mean, if I were them, I'd want him to sign a new contract. Yeah, but I mean, I think that, you know, I think that right now they're fine with the way things are. I'm sure eventually they want to do Daniel Bryan versus Nakamura. Nakamura's talked about that, and now that Nakamura's a heel, that's a good way to do it. I'm sure we'll get eventually Daniel Bryan versus AJ Styles at a pay-per-view. Although it's babyface versus babyface, I mean, and of course you have to do Daniel Bryan versus The Miz. I think, you know, I think that they can, if they want to, lay out a schedule for Daniel Bryan and a list of possible opponents that should persuade him to stay.
We'll try one last time to go to the Skype call. I believe it's Skype. Hello, are you with us? I feel like he's...
It's me,
like,
the Black Scorpion Sting. Remember Tulsa, 1986.
This sounds like you hear like whales underwater communicating with each other.
Yes.
I feel like this is what that.
I hope that's what the whales are doing. It's. I don't want to think about what
well,
else it could be.
I suppose you have a point. Long story short,
caller, does it put the lotion on the skin? Caller?
Wow, we muted the caller, so I
thank you.
Thankfully, he can't answer that. So that will end our evening here tonight on Wrestling Night in America. We thank Pat McNeil for joining us, and Pat, we'd be happy to have you on again as soon as our schedules sync up.
Yes, your people can call my people, and somebody can warn Wade Keller. And no, I'd be glad to be back on with you again, James. I mean, Greg, this is oh man. Oh, I'm sorry, Greg. This is a lot of fun. Seriously, this is a lot of fun, you people. Go and download, subscribe to Wayback Playback on iTunes. Listen to it every week. It's free. Enjoy, and I love doing this, and Greg and I will do this again.
I'll take it as a compliment that you call me James. How about that?
That's probably a good way to do it, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Greg.
We'll be back next week. Thank you, Pat. After Extreme Rules, goes off the air. We'll be back here on Wrestling Night in America. And if you are not a VIP member of PWTorch.com, here are the details of how to go about it.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free editions of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.
Yeah.